Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the endarkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki. You know, I love that new station identification, that gong at the beginning. It's very striking. Welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power, and we shine a light ahead of us to where evolution may be leading. Purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address problems rather than defend positions. Well, here is an irony supplement to Munch on. America is in the midst of the most politically polarizing time since the Civil War, and yet, just 2 years ago, a 2018 Pew Research Center poll found that nearly 80% of Americans in each party believe it's important for Republicans and Democrats to work together on issues. How could that be? Are we that schizophrenic, or is there a deep longing to find our sane and sacred center at the heart and soul of who we are? Well, our guest this week on Wiki Politiki is family therapist and author Bill Doherty. He's the co-founder of Braver Angels, an organization dedicated to bringing the polarized sides together to find a new angle, where instead of dehumanizing, we rehumanize the other side. The problem is pretty obvious. The political narrative and discourse on both sides is to paint the other as a dangerous enemy, and the less contact we have with them, the better. And of course, the easier it is to demonize them. Well, in December of 2016, after the last presidential election, Braver Angels co-founders David Blankenhorn, Bill Doherty, and David Lapp brought together 10 Trump supporters and 11 Clinton supporters in South Lebanon, Ohio, for their first red-blue workshop. The goal was simple. They wanted to see if Americans could still disagree respectfully and just maybe find common ground. The results were surprising and heartening, and I quote from their website, "Republican and Democrat, native-born and immigrant, these Americans liked each other, but first they had to hear one another's story. Black and white, Christian and Muslim, these Americans could appreciate each other's opinions, but first they needed to see where those opinions came from. They could listen to each other's points of view once they saw one another, not as stereotypes, but as neighbors and a country they shared," unquote. Well, today we're talking with Bill Doherty, and we want to hear more about this ongoing dialogue and project and the implications for what I would call political climate change in the near future. Bill Doherty is a co-founder of Braver Angels and creator of the Braver Angels Workshop Approach. He's a professor and director of the Minnesota Couples on the Brink Project. I guess we have a nation on the brink. At the Department of Family Social Science at the University of Minnesota. He combines a background in family therapy and community engagement. Okay, and keep in mind that the intention of Braver Angels is not to change minds, but to change hearts so that the two sides can disagree more constructively and the dueling dualities can evolve into dynamic duo dance partners. Welcome, Bill. It's good to have you.
Hey, thank you. Good to be here. And that was a great setup.
Good, good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. Let's just start at the beginning, December 2016, when you and your associates decided to bring Trump supporters and Hillary supporters into the same room for a conversation. What was it that precipitated that idea?
It was David Blankenhorn, who lives in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, calling another David, David Lapp, a colleague of ours. We've worked together on family issues before, who lives in Southwest Ohio. And they were talking about how people were feeling in each area. As you could, might imagine, Upper West Side of Manhattan, it was gloom and doom, a funereal situation after Trump was elected and Hillary lost. And the atmosphere in Southwest Ohio was hope and change. And they were struck by how divided the country was in terms of its reaction. And they decided on the spur of the moment to get, as you said, 10 and 10, and it does be 10 and 11, 10 Hillary voters, 10 Trump voters together for 13 hours over a weekend in early December. And then they called me, and I said, boy, that's brave. What were you thinking? What were you thinking of doing with them? And they said they didn't know, but they thought I could figure that out. And so I was free that weekend and decided to join in. And so that's how we, so we had no other big plan other than to bring people together and see if they could connect across the differences and see if they could, experience a common ground despite those differences. And we'd see where we went from there.
Well, you know, how did you find these people? How were they chosen? And then what happened? I mean, I'm sure that as a family therapist, you're used to dealing with contentious sides. How did you manage to get these people to listen to one another and evolve a conversation over 13 hours, which is a long time?
Yeah, well, David Lapp, who lives in Southwest Ohio, he recruited them. And so David is a Red himself, and he knew a lot of conservatives. And so he went to his network, people he knew in his community, people on Facebook. And then he knew some Democrats as well, but not as many. So he recruited some from his network. And then he went to the Democratic County Democratic chair. She recruited some. So, and then he talked to everybody on the phone to make sure they knew what this was about. So that's how he recruited everybody. And then, and we met in a, you know, church basement, 3 hours Friday night, all day Saturday, and then Sunday afternoon. And the, you know, the format, I have a fair amount of experience in bringing groups together to learn to be constructive. It starts with an opening question, introduce yourself and say why you came. And what stood out from why people came is they said, we can't go on with this animosity, this rancor. We have a town to leave. We have schools to run, hospitals, roads to build. And we have to work together. We just can't fight each other. So it was a concern about their country, about their community. It was a concern about the nation. And that was the very positive way we started.
Excellent. So that was really, so in finding out that people came because they, you know, even though they coming from different sites, they shared this realization that there was something toxic about how this was coming about and that we needed to actually work together in order to get things done. How did the process proceed? I'm sure there were moments of tension.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, what I can say is that this workshop and the other ones that have evolved from this are really they're constructed, they're designed to increase the potential to hear each other and to decrease reactivity to each other. So I'll tell you the first exercise we did, first mm-hmm. group activity. It's called a stereotypes exercise, where we have the reds and blues in different rooms, and each group comes up with the top five false negative, exaggerated stereotypes that they think the other side has of them. So if you're a red, a conservative, what do you think blues think of you and your side that is false, exaggerated, and wrong, exaggerated, and the false stereotypes? And so each group did that, and you might imagine what they came up with. For reds, racist is always top. They think we're racist. They think we are anti-woman or homophobic. We don't care about the needy. We're my country, right or wrong, anti-science. The blues come up with, they think we're, the other side thinks we're arrogant and elitist. We're in the big government for its own sake. We want to encourage dependency. We're baby killers. We're unpatriotic. Okay. So we encourage people to just put it out. I mean, say, put it down bluntly. What do you think of the other side thinks of you that is exaggerated, wrong? And so they would vote on their list, top five. And then for each of those, they would do two things with their facilitator. The first is correct the stereotype. So if you don't see yourself as racist, how do you see yourselves? What do you believe and what values do you hold about racial equality? And then the second question is there kernel of truth in it? And we describe kernels of truth as it might be a subset of your side. This is characteristic of it. It might be something in history that's carried over from the past that the residue is still there. It may be something that your side doesn't pay a lot of attention to, or it's maybe a blind spot, or it could be in the heated rhetoric of public debate, your side comes across this way. So those are some possible categories. And so we get them to come up with the kernels of truth. And of course, the other side's doing the same thing. And then they have a reporter, and we come back together, and that person reports out, these are the stereotypes that we think people have of us that are wrong. Here's where we are instead, let's correct the stereotype. And then here's where we see kernels of truth. And then after those presentations, the people get together in pairs, red, blue pairs, and then in the whole group to answer a two-part question. What did you learn about how the other side sees themselves? And did you see anything in common? What did you learn about how the other side sees themselves? And did you see anything in common? And the ground rules are, they've agreed on the ground rules. When there's questions on the table, that's all you can address. So I was facilitating this. If somebody started to say, I don't agree with them on that or whatever, you stop them because that's not what the questions are on the table. So that's the opening exercise, putting the most negative stuff out right away and having people have a chance to say how they think of themselves in contradiction to that. And then the humility part of what we do is to address kernels of truth.
Wow, that's so good. Now, how did that design come about? Was that something that you had worked with before with opposing groups or couples? Or
yeah, this is an exercise that was designed a couple of decades ago by a family therapist colleague of mine named Dick Chasen with a group called Public Conversations. And I had been in a workshop where we did that exercise. What I added to it was the kernels of truth. In the original exercise, it was correct the stereotypes, and it was quite valuable. And then what I added to it was the kernels of truth.
You know, it's so interesting, it seems very obvious that each side very clearly can see the shadow of the other side, because that's what their side is emphasizing. Mm-hmm. And so to come to that humility piece, first of all, what might be true in that? What might actually be true? And it's a safe way to reflect on oneself. So what happened? How did, I mean, that's a pretty intense opener.
Yeah, that's how we started. Just dive right in. And what happened is that there's two things. One is that people are actually impressed that the other side understands how they're perceived. You know, a lot of times people think you're yes. clueless. You know, you have yes. no idea that we see yes. it this way. Okay. Yes. And so yes. that's the first one. Oh yeah. They actually know what we think of them. Okay. you know, and then when the groups land the kernels of truth. First, in the correction of the exorcist, I'll take patriotism, for example. So blues always think that the Reds think that they're not patriotic, they don't love the country. So the blues affirmed, I remember seeing it in the, you know, written on the paper, big, bold letters, "We love this country." And we think that part of our love for this country is that we are critical when our country does not live up to its ideals. But they began with, "We love this country." Okay. The Reds say that we abhor racism. We think racism is a terrible evil in this country, and it's been, you know, around too long in this country. And we believe in the equal worth and dignity of all people. And now we get to the kernels, and we realize that not everybody on our side believes these. And in fact, we have some leaders who we have doubts about.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. So can imagine then. Oh, and by the way, when the Reds didn't do the kernel with the blues, so we love the country, and we criticize it when we think we need to. And then the kernel is that there's some people on our side who don't want to affirm the greatness of the country. They just want to trash it, and we reject that. Okay. So you're on the other side listening to this, and what it does is it softens you. Like, these people are actually thoughtful. They have some ideals that I can agree with, and they also have some self-reflection on how their side is not perfect. It softens you towards them.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back after the break talking more with Bill Daugherty about braver angels. We'll be back very shortly.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back on Wiki Politiki with our guest, Bill Daugherty, Braver Angels. You just gave us the first process. This is a 13-hour process program for the weekend. That's a tough act to follow. What happened after that, and how did the weekend end?
Well, so yeah, I'll do the next one, which is a fishbowl conversation. And a fishbowl is an old group process technique where you have two groups who differ in some way. One group, you flip a coin to see who goes first, and that group sits in chairs in a circle. And then sitting around them in an outer circle is the other group. And you have a conversation inside circle, and the job of the people in the outer circle is to listen, observe, and learn something about how the people in the inner circle see themselves, see the world, and to find anything in common. But you're not interacting verbally or non-verbally. We hardly ever get a chance to hear a group of like-minded people, regular folks, talking with one another about some important questions where we don't have to respond. Well, we can't respond. We're not making eye contact. And we don't have to agree or disagree. We're just observing and learning. And so that's the fishbowl process. And so the two questions in the fishbowl are, first one is, why are your side's values and policies good for the country? Why are your side's values and policies good for the country? So this is, put it out there. Put it out there why, like, free market capitalism helps everybody eventually, because good job is the best welfare program, for example. If you're on the blue side, put out there why an adequate social safety net allows people a chance to get out of poverty and have a chance to opportunity to make it in the world. Just two examples. Why your side's policies and values are good for the country. And then the second, and then everybody gets a chance to respond in the inner circle. And then the second question is, what are your reservations or concerns about your own side? What are your reservations or concerns about your own side? And again, in the moderation or facilitation of this, that's all they can respond to. So the moderator holds them to that. And then after both of those questions, the circles flip, inner circle, outer circle. And you tell the people in the inner circle, your job is not to respond to what the last group said, just to answer the questions yourself. And then when we finish that exercise, it's processed in with this question, just the same as before. What did you learn about how the other side sees themselves? And did you see anything in common? And then we this process first in red, blue pairs, and then it's processed in the whole group. So that's the second exercise. And the people also get a lot out of that one.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah, I mean, how often do you get to be the proverbial fly on the wall and actually listen in on a conversation of people who you may have preconceptions about? That's enlightening. And then, of course, having the red-blue dyad mm-hmm. you know, talking about that. And then, that should get you through Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. And then where we let me also say we have a ground rule in that exercise that you're not at all when you're in the middle talking about the other side. You're not doing comparisons. You're not saying, you know, we care more about poor people than they do, or, you know, we're for free market economy and they're socialists. That you cannot do that. If anybody starts to do that, you stop them. And you don't even do, like, on the reservations of concerns. So keep in mind that reservations of concerns, that's part of the theme here, is humility. And so mm-hmm. when you say, for example, often both sides say that politicians on their side are too much into big donors, as too much money. And what we tell them is to not say on both sides of this way. They can talk for themselves. You're saying that your side, politicians and your side, are too much into the money. So you see what I'm doing there? It's not we all or everybody. Yeah. It's like your side. So then the next day is, the next exercise actually we're in just Saturday afternoon, is questions and answer exercise. They're kind of warmed up now. They've gotten to know each other, and they've been sort of socialized into our approach and our ground rules. And so now we let them ask questions of each other. Mm. And there what we do is we have people go to separate rooms, again, split up the reds and blues, and they have 20 minutes with a facilitator to come up with four good questions of understanding and deepening to ask the other side. We distinguish that from gotcha questions. You know, the gotcha question at that time for blue to red would be after the Hollywood access. So given the values you talk about, how can you justify voting for a sexual predator, right? I mean, that would be
Yeah.
Right. So we We help them come up with and refine the questions, and then they write them down, and then get into two groups. So half of the reds from one join half the blues from the other. So now we have two mixed groups of reds and blues, each with four questions for the other, and they take turns asking the question, and they can follow up. But they can't argue back. In other words, they can ask clarifications and deepening, but they can't say, well, no, you're wrong about that. So an example of a blue question to reds, because we get into the tricky things like abortion. Do you ever see a situation in which there would be legal legitimacy to abortion, and if so, what would that be? A question that reds ask blues might be, do you think there is a risk in social safety net policies for creating dependency? And if so, what would you do about that risk? So those would be a couple of examples. And so they take turns asking, responding. With the facilitation being, you don't say, well, that's wrong. You know, you stay in a questioning mode. And so then you come back and you process that the same way. What did you learn from this exercise is the question, because a lot of times people learn how hard it is to ask really good questions. So they learn from developing the questions, and then they learn from the other side's answers. So again, they process that in pairs and then in the whole group. So then we're ready to finish on Saturday.
Wow. Okay, and then, of course, they go home and they sleep on it. And they might even talk with their partners at home.
Right.
They may have some other input. You know, I find that in having worked with two sides, that often what happens is when people go back to their tribe, they get some pushback of, how do you tell when you talk to those people and all of that? So what was it like on Sunday morning when people returned?
Well, they were high.
Sunday
afternoon, that's right. They were high. They were feeling great. And then the last part of it then is on action steps. What do you want to do individually? What could be done with your group acting on your own? And what could be done by both groups acting together that would help us move our country forward and prevent a long-term civic divorce? And so those are action steps. And out of that came this idea, we need to do a statement. This has to go on. We want to have a reunion. So, I mean, this was the first ever group. And so lots of great action ideas came up at that point. And then we finish up about what people are taking with them. Now, that was the 13 hours. And let me just say that what we realized is that was too much, too intensive to be scalable in the country. So what I did after that was develop a day-long version that made some of the exercises a little shorter. But we did in the day-long, we do the stereotypes, the fishbowl, the questions, and the actions we get in the day. And a three-hour kind of an appetizer that has the fishbowl and the stereotypes. So two other versions so that we could more easily scale this.
And then how did that turn into what started out as Better Angels and became Braver Angels? What was the spark to continue that work?
Yeah, well, it came out of that first group. They were very excited. They wanted a reunion. We didn't have any money for this. I cashed in another frequent flyer ticket and flew back to Ohio. The group produced a document that everybody vetted and had their input on, and they produced a document for the country. And we just decided this has to go on. The national spark came from a national public radio interview. The first 100 days of the Trump presidency, National Public Radio did 4 hours if Monday through Thursday in the evening, national town hall call-in with two liberal hosts, two conservative hosts. And one of the liberal hosts happens to be in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, where, and I knew her because I had for years have been doing family oriented programming. And so I happened to be on doing something related to marriage or parenting after the Ohio workshop. And I mentioned to Carrie Miller, the host, that I had done this workshop in Ohio with Reds and Blues, and she was all over it. And she said, would you come on the national call-in show? So it was probably February, where I and then two women, a red and a blue from Ohio, who were in a radio station in Dayton, I think, the three of us had an hour on national public radio to talk about our experience. And it was, of course, great to have two participants who had become friends. What happened after that is was just remarkable. I think we barely had a website at that point, but people found us from all over the country and wrote and said, would you come to my town and do this? We need this. And so we scraped together a little money from a foundation, and we rented a bus, a politician's bus. It was former Representative John Boehner's old bus and his bus driver. And so in the summer, starting July 4th in Ohio, we went on a 8-state there and 13 town tour, doing variations on this workshop. I also created a skills workshop, just teaching the skills for how to do this, where you weren't limited to, you know, a small number. You could have a bunch of people. And so we went through all these towns, staying in people's houses, doing the workshops in Elks Lodges and all kinds of places. And that gave us a chance to really refine the workshop, make sure it was working, get a lot of feedback. We found media was showing up all over. I remember when we did in suburban D.C., we had the Washington Post reporter on one side of the room and the Washington Times reporter on the other side of the room. And then the next Saturday, Al Jazeera came and filmed the whole thing. So we were finding both red and blue journalists and outlets interested. So we had, remember, David Blankenhorn said, we have lightning in a bottle here. We've got people fascinated by this. And so then we just solidified the organization and started to train other moderators. And we're up to counting all of our workshops, and we also set up debates and other things. We're up to 1,000 workshops now across the country.
Wow, that's really very heartening. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with Living Room Conversations. You're familiar with Joan Blades and Gable. Yeah, and again, that began. You may know that Joseph McCormick, who was a transpartisan organizer that I worked with, he put together a retreat of leaders, apparently around 2006, I'm guessing, including Joan, from who was with Move On at that point, and Michelle Combs from Christian Coalition, and the two of them became friends. And they're still, you know, so this is really a very, very interesting process when people begin to connect a little bit of cognitive dissonance, perhaps, about how they've previously viewed these people. Do you see any evidence, you know, again, that's a lot of workshops, 1,000 events. Do you see any evidence that people have actually softened? That's the word that you used. Without really changing, I'm going to change teams, not without changing teams, but basically softening. Have you seen that happen?
Yeah, well, we have had the resources for up till now, and this is now changing, was just post-workshop evaluations, and which we ask questions like that. And in those post-workshop evaluations, people are indicating that they are what I'm calling softening, that they're hearing the other side better, they see more in common, they feel like they can express themselves more. We've been a kind of a bootstrap organization, and we're now attracting some major researchers, political science researchers and others, who are putting their resources into more, you know, to longer term follow-ups. And even there's a study underway now with college students, which is a randomized controlled trial to see, you know, what the effects are longer term. So that's on our to-do list to answer that question. The other thing I want to say that's distinctive that we decided at the beginning is that the leadership, the board, the leadership group, we have state coordinators for every state, half red and half blue. And so we made this important decision that we are going to, at the leader level, always be equal in reds and blues. And that's been some of the key to our success, because what we learned is that a lot of organizations in the space of conflict resolution, communication across differences, are blue, because most of the people who develop these approaches and who do this for a living are more liberal. And so the problem gets to be that the drift goes in the blue direction. And so by having half red, half blues at the leadership level, we have been able to resist that.
Yes, it certainly seems that's the way that's gone, and it skews that way. And then conservatives feel, well, you know, I think that this is really just a plot to get me to convert. So
exactly. Yeah, yeah. Now we decided to make it a membership organization too, and so we have about 11,000 members now. It costs $12 a year. We wanted to make it quite reasonable. And so we have active members. And then since in the last year or so, we've started a Braver Angels type debate program. And so there's right now there's two national debates every week online, where we're tackling in a parliamentary style debate where there's no winners and losers, and where the reactivity is kept down because you ask your questions through the chair. We're tackling, you know, just around race, reparations, police defunding. We're starting in September a whole series of debates and forums on what we're calling Trump's America. The debate topic for next week, for example, is the resolve that Trump has been good for Black America. We're finding we can create some formats like this where there's enough control over the process. And that I want to highlight is that we've developed some expertise at creating containers, if you will, structures and processes where people's best selves come out rather than their worst selves.
Good. Well, we're going to take a short break now, and we'll be back with a final segment with Bill Dougherty. Fascinating conversation on how to break down barriers between the two sides and get them talking with one another. Wiki Politiki back after these messages.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay.
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Okay, we're back on Wiki Politiki with our guest, Bill Dougherty. We're talking about Braver Angels and healing conversations between the red side and the blue side. You know, I find it interesting that your background is as a family therapist.
Yeah.
Here we have a family feud. I want to go a little deeper into that. this may be just my perspective and my distortion, but it seems to me that the two political parties, as they are right now, represent in their imbalanced state, imbalanced male and female roles and energies. I see the Republicans in a most imbalanced way as kind of the male abuser party, and the Democrats in their most imbalanced way is kind of the female enabler, idiot compassion party. Will you disabuse me of that idea, or would you reinforce that in part?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm
going to get you in big trouble today.
That's right. I don't think I'll be able to disabuse you. That was very, you thought about that and set it up very, very cleverly. My response is that it's probably both and on both sides. That there are you could certainly, if you're red, you could point to very nasty people on the blue side, and that there are, you know, a lot of pro-life folks on the red side see themselves as really quite compassionate for the unborn. So I hear what you're saying on that, and I know there's some political science folks and communication scholars who have written about this sort of a good parent, soft parent, dad, mom kind of thing with the political parties. And so it's a stereotype, and with most stereotypes, there's something there. However, it's not a braver angels approach. Let me put it like that, to use those kinds of descriptors, because people tend on their own side tend to rebel against them.
Well, let's look at the other aspect of it, which is your experience as a therapist in bringing, in healing family problems and bringing sides together. This really is a national family feud, and you talked about it at that level. What kinds of tools have you developed in working with couples who may be wanting to get a divorce, and these two sides who have acted like they want to get at least a separation?
Yeah. The two main things that I brought over from family therapy, and particularly from couples or marital therapy, are, first of all, that you have to create the container, the structure, the process. You have to have a disciplined way of conducting sessions with couples, so you don't let them have the same fights in your office that they have at home. And so the same thing with groups coming together. You can't just throw red meat into the middle of the room. You know, what do you think of Trump? And then the worst will come out. In fact, just as an aside there, if you want to see the opposite of a Braver Angels approach, Google Oprah Winfrey 60 Minutes, Republicans and Democrats, because she did two sessions on 60 Minutes that were travesties, people screaming at each other. So the first thing I learned is, it was terrible. And so the first thing is you have to create the right process for people to be able to listen and talk. And then the second thing is that in my couples therapy work, I ask each person to self-reflect. People become specialists in knowing what's wrong with their partner, and can go on for pages about their partner's contributions to the problems, and maybe a sentence on their own. This is part of that humility part, that introspection. So, for example, when people have been through initial workshops and they go to follow up ones that are around specific topics, and so it might be talk about what you would do, what gun control policies you would put forward, and why. And then the second question is, what are some potential unintended consequences of your policy? How might it go wrong? So we're asking people, that's again from couples therapy, is to look in the mirror and not just through a window at the other person.
Exactly. Yeah, that really is important, because it requires, and maybe that's why the Braver Angels is in there, because it does require courage to reflect on yourself and be vulnerable and not go, oh my God, anything I say will be held against me.
Yes. Yeah. And the only way that's happened is that both people get vulnerable. You just can't ask one person to do it alone.
Exactly.
It has to be both. By the way, the way we started out as better angels, and that's from the Lincoln phrase, the better angels of our nature, from his second inaugural speech, just before the Civil War ended. We went with that for quite some time, and then we got sued by an organization that owned the trademark to Better Angels. this is America, isn't it? This is America. It would be like if we called ourselves God Bless America and then somebody owned the trademark and they sued us. Okay, anyway. So we came up with Braver Angels, and we actually like it as well or better because we think this is a time that calls for courage, as you said.
That's really funny, but that's one of the problems, is that where there is lack of trust, there's more litigation, and so you're actually creating a space for more trust. So, as we wrap up the show in the next 10 minutes or so, let's look at the future, and I see, and again, this may be my distorted perspective, but I also see. In that 80% of people who go, why can't we just get along, rather than why just we can't get a longer stick to beat each other over the head with, what do you see is there a possible positive outcome where we do learn to cooperate and gather around in couples? You called it a container, which is something that both sides own and hold in common. Is there a sense of this common intention being strong enough to hold at the center?
Well, that's what we'll find out. We do know that the one issue that unites the country, that the pollsters find over 90% agreement on this issue, that is, we are too divided. Everyone agrees on that. That's a plus. There are not many people who think the State of the Union is strong. And so I always believe that if you have a consensus that there is a problem, that's the opening for the possibility of change. And that's what we're about. And I can say one positive thing we haven't talked about so far is we're getting the attention of political leaders because they are hearing from their constituents that they want them to stop fighting so much. So I did skills workshops for members, for 30 members of the Minnesota State Legislature. And when we asked them why they came, one of the main reasons was when they were door knocking in the last election, more than any other issue, they heard about polarization and fighting and paralysis and people telling them get going. And we have a lot of Braver Angels members. People can join for $12 and get all the information about what's going on. We put out the word to our members in Minnesota, encourage them to ask their legislator to go to the darn workshop. And some legislators told me they had constituents saying, this would be great. I would love to see you go to it. And so at that kind of small level, that can make a difference. We also have had members of Congress approach us, and we are working now on developing Braver Angels type town halls for members of Congress and constituents. We did an all-day Red Blue workshop for the congressional staff members of two Minnesota members of Congress, which was very powerful. We are doing a meeting this week with County Commissioners Association in Minnesota, where we're going to be setting up one-to-one conversations between rural and urban county commissioners, and most of whom, more red and more blue, but we're doing this urban-rural. We're getting into the race conversation with Braver Angels style one-to-one conversations between black people and white people. So what's encouraging to me is that we're getting more people coming to us. And so I was just on the phone this morning with people from a nationally known, you know, Fortune 500 company brand name, who is asking us to do some workshops, some skills workshops for their employees during the election campaign. And so there is something happening out there where the understanding that we're too divided is catching hold, and Brave Angels and other groups are being invited to address it. So that gives me hope.
That's very heartening, and I think it's also true. Again, because if let's imagine that you're this happens in the corporate world all the time, where people from different backgrounds and diversity certainly happens on sports teams. I think that's why sports teams are so very quickly came out to support of Black Lives Matter, because there you have people from the South, white people from the South, and Black people and Latinos and pretty much everything else who are on a team, and they have the same goal, and they have to actually work together in a very intensive way. So we see this happening in the non-political world a lot, where people have to solve problems together, and the focus is they put their disagreements in the background and the issue that they're facing in the foreground. So I think that having the container and the process that you've developed is really going to help, as you said, across the board, even companies and local areas. I mean, schools can do it. This is really a very, it's a template for engagement. If you were to look at for a larger goal, you know, what's your intention over the next period of time? The election's going to happen. Somebody's going to win, regardless of how that's taken. How do you see this taking advantage of this recognition that we can't go on as divided as we can? And the next piece is, are there ways that we can use the polarities to actually come to breakthrough solutions that are not this or that?
Well, that's a good setup for the last thing I wanted to talk about, because we have a election season and post-election initiative underway now called With Malice Toward None. With Malice Toward None. People can learn about it on our website, in which we are recruiting religious congregations, colleges, universities, and civic organizations to get people to sign a pledge and have conversations before the election that basically say that whether my side wins or loses, I will not treat people who voted differently with ridicule and contempt and hatred. I will treat them with respect, and I will seek to understand what aspirations, concerns led them to vote differently than me. So I will not hate them, I ridicule them, and I'll try to understand them. That's the pledge. To invite people to sign up for post-election, after we know the results, whenever that is, post-election gatherings, first with people who voted the same way. If you are happy about it, you gather. If you're unhappy, you gather to work through the feelings either way, because each side is going to be tempted either by a triumphalism and let those people, let's just grind them into the ground, or hatred and revenge and fear. And so separate gatherings, and then a commitment to joint gatherings, which would be Brave Angels type workshops, like Red Blue workshops, where people would come together across those differences. So that's so what we're saying is, this is, as you said, entirely predictable spiking of polarization prior to November 3rd, and then again from November 3rd to January 20th. And let's take advantage of it, if you will, by trying to inoculate the population against hatred beforehand. Win or lose, I won't hate. Mm-hmm. And then can I come together within my own group and across differences afterwards to build this country back?
You know, what's really good is that this is something that people can get involved with. On the WikiPolitiki page, my WikiPolitiki website and page for this show, there's a link to Braver Angels, and people can become more involved with this process. One very quick last question before we have to end. What was it that surprised you the most as you as you did this project and process?
I think what surprised me the most, I'll just be personal about it, okay? What impacted me the most was the realization that I could learn for the first time in my life to be bilingual. I had always wanted to know a foreign language, and in this process, I learned to speak red and blue. And so the discovery under that is that we have different languages. And then we can't talk because I talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, and you think I don't mean you as a white person. And as a red, I talk about loving our country, and you think it's I hate immigrants. And so I've learned that we are speaking different languages and that we have to understand what those differences are and translate for each other.
Good. Well, we'll actually have to create a dictionary. I think my friend Jacob Heft, a conservative activist, actually has created a red-blue dictionary.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Bill, for being our guest on Wiki Politics today and giving us plenty of positive food.
It was my pleasure.
My pleasure, too. Thank you. Back next week.